Yeah. So I think it's now recording. Okay. 1 minute more and then we're ready to start. Which person at nuclear physics should I contact to tell them that we have this recording? Mikael?
You can just tell me, I can download it to my computer and redistribute it. It's Robert Kaminsky and his colleagues.
Okay.
Okay, but you can just give me a link and then I will...
Sure, okay, so I'll see if I can link this to the Indico page. And
that will be the best thing, yes.
Okay, so we're at 5 minutes past one exactly, according to my watch. So, okay, from Robert Kaminsky, thanks for recording. So, we're 5 minutes past one, so it's time to start proceedings. So, we have the pleasure today to have Stefan Bukorski from Warsaw, who will tell us about precision measurements as windows beyond the standard model. Stefan?
Thank you. Yes, indeed, this is the title of my talk. And let me start with just a second. I have some problems with changing my transparencies. What's going on here?
It was working before when you moved it.
Yes. Ah, here. Okay. So let me begin with a few words of general introduction. The standard model, as we all know, is the end of a certain story, which has begun by the discovery of radioactivity at the end of the 19th century. And it took almost 120 years of research to construct the standard model. And actually the story of the progress was really fascinating, or is fascinating, how the progress was driven by a very strong link between experiment and theory, and also between simultaneously understanding the strong and electroweak interactions. Now, the chapter has been closed by the discovery of the Higgs particle. And I think people often underestimate the significance of the discovery. People who are hungry for further new discoveries do not appreciate so much, often do not appreciate that strongly enough. The discovery of the Higgs itself, Higgs particle itself, which is fundamental, in my opinion, at least for three reasons. First of all, it has confirmed the fundamental and universal role of symmetries as the basis for understanding the phenomena at the quantum level. Secondly, it explains the origin of mass, of elementary constituents of matter. And finally, and this I will come back to this point again and again in my talk, It turns out once again that, and this is thanks to the discovery of the Higgs particle, that we can understand physical phenomena step by step, thanks to mathematically consistent, complete, but most likely still effective theory. So the discovery of the Higgs boson is really a great thing, but at the same time, the Higgs particle is a big puzzle, as I will try to discuss later on. So the question is the standard model a consistent theory up to the Planck scale? The answer is yes. It's renormalizable, and this is precisely because of the existence of the Higgs particle. There is no Landau pole up to the Planck scale, which means theory remains perturbative up to the Planck scale. It has almost stable vacuum up to the Planck scale, but stable enough for the existence of our universe. So indeed, it could be the theory of everything. Those conclusions, actually, it's important to stress that those conclusions strongly depend on the parameters of the model, which are taken from experiment, which is the top mass and the Higgs mass. It happens miraculously so that just with those parameters, with those values of the parameters, the standard model is really a consistent, mathematically consistent theory up to the Planck scale. Yes, so the standard model is a consistent theory up to the Planck scale, but the question is, isn't it just an effective theory, an approximation to a deeper one? And we have such an example already in our in elementary interactions. Quantum electrodynamics is also consistent up to the Planck scale, but it's only a low energy approximation to the standard model. So clearly mathematical consistency does not necessarily mean physical correctness up to the very high scales. And one reason why we expect the standard model to be only an effective theory is this puzzling Higgs particle. Why puzzling? Higgs boson is the only spin one particle in the standard model. It looks very artificial, actually, because it's the only particle that is condensing in the universe. But we still don't know the dynamics behind the Higgs condensate. It's introduced by hand, it's just a construction. So in other words, it perfectly well describes the Brout-Englert Higgs mechanism, but it does not explain it dynamically. So altogether, the Higgs particle is crucial for the standard model, for its success, but it's very special. This is not the only reason why we should not expect the standard model to be the theory of everything. Apart from puzzling Higgs boson, there are also neutrino masses. Most likely there is dark matter in the universe. Certainly there is antimatter asymmetry in the universe, and those things do not find any, as we know, do not find any explanation within the standard model. However, the problem is that we have no slightest idea, in fact, where is the new scale? Where is the scale of some deeper theory? And that makes our situation really different from what we were facing or what we are looking at for the last, let's say, 100 years in the past, because there is no information about, we are not driven by any experimental data, nor by any theoretical consistency to guess where the new scale can be. So in a certain sense, we are really in a turning point of particle physics, because after this 120 years of some more or less continuous progress inspired by new data, inspired by some theoretical consistency of the theory, at the moment we do not know where the new scale can be. And just to give you the examples, how different the situation is from what we are witnessing in the past, let me just remind you two examples of those hints. One is, of course, the Fermi four fermion theory for neutron beta decay. It has introduced a new mass scale in particle physics and essentially a guarantee of new discoveries. Just the Fermi constant GF is dimensionful, and that was a strong hint to expect new discoveries at the scale given by the Fermi constant. Another example is the Higgs particle. For many years, we were more or less certain to discover something around 1 TeV or below, because this was a theoretical argument that something must happen in the standard model to unitarize the WW scattering amplitude. And there is nothing similar now. So now I would like to discuss a bit. As I said, the standard model is a renormalizable, but most likely effective theory. So what are the benefits and drawbacks of renormalizable but effective theories? Well, they are more precisely illustrated by the so-called Appelquist-Karazone-decoupling theorem, which tells us that we can organize particle physics according to the hierarchical, and actually I should say mass scales in nature. And the theorem says that if a renormalizable effective theory, renormalizable, this is important, is embedded into a larger theory with new particles of mass scale F, M, the deviations from the predictions of the effective theory for observables propped at the energy E are suppressed by powers of E square over M square. So this is a very powerful organizing principle, and this is a blessing because we could celebrate the success of quantum electrodynamics, describing the physics around 1 GeV without understanding the standard model where the characteristic mass scale is 100 GeV. But at the same time, it's a strong drawback, because to find laws of physics beyond the effective theory, which is successful, physically successful, it could be, as I said, it can be mathematically consistent up to the Planck scale. But what we know about the standard model, that it's physically successful at the scale of 100 GeV or so. And to find the laws of physics, according to that theorem, to find the laws of physics, which is successful at some energy, one needs energy of order of the new mass scale to produce new particles, or precision of order of E square over M square. These are two complementary ways to go beyond renormalizable but effective theory. And both ways are not easy, as we know. And I would like to focus in the rest of this talk on that precision path. So the power of precision measurements has proved to be very strong already in the past. I give you some examples here. The list is probably much longer, but for instance, precision measurements of neutral current, in deep inelastic scattering, polarized electron neutron scattering, strongly predicted the range of masses for W and Z, and the particles were later discovered at CERN. Precision measurements of the gate sector at LEP and at SLAC properly predicted the mass of the top quark and the Higgs mass. And that was followed by just Tevatron discovery of the top and LHC discovery of Higgs, of the Higgs particle. Well, the list, as I said, is longer, but doesn't matter at the moment. So the question is whether precision measurements of the lepton, top, and Higgs sectors, which are accessible now for us, whether they will predict again the way to go beyond the standard model. And I would like to focus on a couple of hot precision corners, which are hot both experimentally and theoretically right now. And they are the muon magnetic moment, G minus two, which was recently measured again in Fermilab and confirmed slightly increased the significance of the deviation, which is around four sigma right now. Another very interesting precision measurement are the electric dipole moment measurements, which unfortunately for now give us only the upper bound for that for this electron EDM, but that this upper bound has strong plays a strong and important role for various for constraining various theoretical speculations. Another corner are Higgs decays, again no deviation from the standard model at the moment, but one of the main goals of the new accelerators to study the Higgs properties with high precision. And finally, flavor physics, in particular so-called rare decays, where we see a long-standing deviation of lepton universality, again at about four sigma level, again confirmed by the new data from the LHCb. So I will discuss two cases where we see some deviations, well, not fully yet statistically convincing, and two cases which are very important for the theoretical progress. I mean, electron EDM and Higgs decays. So the muon magnetic moment, this is a long history, of course, both on the experimental and theoretical side. And in terms of the Feynman diagrams, the first two are contributions from the first one is just the pre-level QED diagram. The second one is loop correction plus the corrections, this big dot on the internal line that corresponds to the strong, to the hadronic corrections to the photon propagator, which is the main uncertainty in the theoretical calculations, but also the important significant number changing the final result. And finally, the contribution from the standard model I just drew one diagram, but there are several. There's also the Higgs contribution, for instance, and the Z contribution. So there are several diagrams contributing from the standard model contributing to that, to the magnetic moment. And usually one parameterizes the experimental result in terms of this difference of G minus two. Two is the first diagram. Two gives is given by the first diagram. Now, what I want to stress is that the, and that number a mu is of the order of 1 × 10⁻³ experimentally. 1 × 10⁻³. Usually it's written in a different way. Probably you remember it differently. It's given in units of E over 2m, it's given in, it's written as 10 millions times 10 to the minus 11 or something like that. But in fact, it's 1 × 10⁻³. And the standard model contribution to that number is 152, which is a very small error, times 10 to the minus 11 indeed. So you see how precisely the number, how precisely, first of all, experimentally, how precise the experimental data are. And the discrepancy, the deviation of the present number experimental measurement from the standard model is 250 with some error times 10 to the minus 11. So first of all, the precision is incredible. Secondly, the present deviation from the standard model prediction, which includes this 150 10 to the minus 11 correction, the discrepancy of the experimental data is of the same order of magnitude as the standard model contribution. Well, there have been probably hundreds of papers. The discrepancy is not a new thing, right? It's only this new experiment just confirms the discrepancy and increases its statistical significance by half a sigma or something like that. So it's not really a new thing, but in a sense, it confirms that one should take maybe this discrepancy quite seriously. And secondly, and because it's not a new thing, there are probably hundreds of papers which have been written already in the past to explain this discrepancy. And there are many ways to explain it. None of them is emerging as the most convincing one, but the general conclusion one can draw from the two numbers which I have given you, this 152 and 251, is that the departures, that the new physics, which if the data are really confirmed, the new physics which should explain, which can explain those deviations, should give a contribution of the order of the electroweak scale, which means should be relative, the particles should be relatively light and weakly coupled of the same order of the coupling of the order of magnitude of the electroweak coupling. As I said, there are many, many explanations, but nothing which emerges at the moment as a leading candidate. However, qualitatively, we should expect something which is light and weakly interacting. However, it's not strongly interacting. Or what we need for this explanation is something which is weakly interacting and light. Light strongly interacting are more or less excluded by the LHC bounds. So we probably should think about something which is only weakly interacting and therefore not with small production cross sections at the LHC, therefore not discovered yet. Now I would like to go to precision measurements in the Higgs sector. The Higgs particle is interesting because it plays this double role. As I was stressing, its discovery and its properties, which I will come back to, to, they confirmed the standard model as an effective electroweak theory, as an effective, renormalizable effective weak electroweak theory. But at the same time, there is a window to beyond the standard model physics once the precision of measurements is increased. So this is as it happened very often in the past in many branches of physics. There is a very nice theory which describes certain range of phenomena, but once we increase precision, we see the deviations. And this is precisely what we expect from the measurements in the Higgs sector. Now, one should stress that extended Higgs sector is expected in most beyond the standard model theory. So contrary to the G minus two case, there are many theories beyond the standard model. In all of them, the Higgs properties deviate from the standard model predictions. So among those BSM theories, I would like to mention supersymmetry, of course, where we have two or more elementary Higgs bosons. And actually we have some explanation of the condensation of the Higgs, which is driven by the quantum corrections. There is this idea, which actually is another nice idea, how to stabilize the Higgs mass against large quantum corrections, namely to make it a pseudo-Goldstone boson of some bigger global symmetries. So this is the idea behind the composite Higgs boson. There is a fundamental difference between supersymmetry and composite Higgs theories. In supersymmetry, the Higgs is again an elementary particle, and composite Higgs boson theories, it's composite as the name says, and the spins of constituents are cancelled among constituents, as it happens for Goldstone bosons. And it condensates by a strong, by a new strong attractive force. And the third avenue, which has been followed very often concerning the beyond the standard model series, is our extra dimensions. Here, Higgs boson is again different. It's a spinning particle in extra dimensions. The idea is based on the gauge Higgs unification in the fifth dimension. But so the Higgs has spin in the fifth dimension, but from the four-dimensional point of view, it's a scalar. Finally, there is also a very interesting reason for expecting some deviations of the Higgs parameters from the standard model prediction. Namely, these are the ideas about stimulated to a large extent by the dark matter, by searching for a good dark matter candidate. Namely, the ideas about the existence of so-called hidden sectors, which couple to the standard model particles only through the Higgs portal. It has no other way to couple to the standard. It's total, this hidden sector is usually totally neutral with respect to the standard model interactions, but it can couple to the Higgs particle. So we expect some deviations from the standard model predictions for the Higgs parameters. Essentially, in every more or less complete idea about beyond the standard model physics. But up to now, Actually, this plot is pretty old, but not much has changed. Up to now, the Higgs couplings which are measured within 10 to 20% at the LHC are perfectly consistent with the standard model predictions. And the standard model gives me the Higgs coupling in terms of the mass of the particle over the vacuum expectation value. And once the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs is very well measured by precision electroweak data, once we know the masses of quarks, leptons, and W bosons are also pretty well known. So this is the plot which tells us that up to now, we've seen pretty large experimental errors. Everything is consistent with the standard model prediction. Now, what kind of deviations we expect in the Higgs couplings from new phenomena, from new scales in the elementary particle physics? Well, it's easy to estimate, and actually more detailed calculations in those various models which I have mentioned confirm that conclusion, that for a new scale, for new particles contributing to the loops, via loops to the Higgs couplings, via quantum correction to the Higgs couplings, if that new particles have masses around 1 TeV, then we expect the deviations from the Higgs couplings from the standard model predictions of the order of 1%. 1% means between 1 and 5, more or less, in this case. And the estimation is very simple. It's just those corrections to the Higgs couplings should be of the order of the Higgs mass over the mass of the new particle. So we expect, this is a pretty long way to increase the present experimental precision to reach that order one precision. But as I will show you on the next slide, that precision which is expected, for instance, in the high luminosity LHC varies, in fact, from a couple of percent to a few percent. So there is a good hope for reaching what we need. And as I said, we do expect such deviations in the gauge boson couplings, in the Yukawa couplings to fermions. Also, perhaps we should look for CP violation effects in the Higgs couplings, which are not present at all in the standard model. And also an important sector is to check the Higgs self couplings. Finally, those invisible decays to the BSM beyond the standard model particles are very, very important, very interesting from the point of view of the dark matter searches. And in fact, all those precision measurements in the Higgs sector are really very, very relevant for the cosmological or astrophysical hints to beyond the standard model, which the two main things are the dark matter stuff, obviously, and also the notion of the electroweak baryogenesis. Or baryogenesis does not have to be at the electroweak scale, but this is a very natural hypothesis. And the properties of the Higgs boson and it's the possibility of electroweak baryogenesis crucially depend on the properties of the Higgs. They require CP violation in the Higgs couplings It requires CP violation in the Higgs factor couplings, and it also requires much bigger than in the standard model Higgs so-called triple coupling. So precision tests of the Higgs properties have a very strong direct link to the astrophysical questions. So what is expected at future accelerators? This is a very, it looks like a very complicated plot, but in fact, what is interesting is to see that high luminosity LHC is this gray sign here. And we see that depending on the coupling, we really expect the precision which is of the order of 1%. For instance, for the W Higgs to the W coupling, it will be below 1%. Similarly for Higgs to the tau. And in fact, some others are at the order of a few percent. However, I would like to draw your attention to the last column, which unfortunately I don't see well on my screen. Anyway, this is the precision, this is the branching ratio, the precision in the branching ratio to the invisible particles, which can be reached, for instance, at LHC, high luminosity LHC, they expect precision of the order of 1% as far as the invisible decays are concerned. The branching ratios to invisible decays should be measured with the precision of the order of 1%, which, as I told you, it's on the next slide, is very important for dark matter searches. So the summary of that information which I was giving you is that new scales of the order of 1 TeV lead to deviations from the standard model of a few percent, and the expectation for the high luminosity LHC is to reach such a precision. In particular, what might be a bit striking is that the precision of those invisible Higgs decays will be also of the same order of magnitude. One may wonder how to measure invisible Higgs decays. This is a very complex experimental analysis, which is based on global fits to many, many, many data. So why invisible Higgs decays are so interesting? Many theoretical ideas predict the existence of so-called hidden sectors, which can be the origin of dark matter. And the only coupling to the standard model of such sectors is through the Higgs, so-called Higgs portal, which means the coupling, for instance, of new scalars to the Higgs particles, or a coupling of some new fermions to the Higgs. Of course, lambda has to be dimensionful in this case. The reason why there's an obvious reason why the Higgs portal is so interesting. If the new particles have no standard model quantum numbers at all, in this case, the first coupling does exist, but the second one Yes, it breaks as you do symmetry, but I think that is not the problem here. I mean, as to in an effective theory, it just breaks the electric symmetry. And the searches, for such decays are more or less obvious. It's just to produce enough Higgs particles to begin with, and then to by precise enough measurements in the visible sector to determine also the invisible branching ratio. And the expected sensitivity in the high luminosity LHC is around 2.5%. This is interesting and directly connected with the search for dark matter particles, with so-called direct searches for dark matter particles, which the experiments are based on the idea of colliding dark matter part, a flux of dark matter particles is colliding with nuclei, with nucleons, and the recoil of nucleons gives us the information about the interaction. But that interaction proceeds via the Higgs exchange. And therefore, the limits on the invisible Higgs particles, which indirectly give us an information on the Higgs coupling to the dark matter particle, if the invisible particle is dark matter, or assuming that the invisible particle is dark matter, the branching ratio into invisible channels is a measurement of that coupling of the Higgs to dark matter particle. And that can be translated on the famous plots of the limits resulting from the direct detection experiments, which I mentioned. Those, the direct detection experiments, the results of those experiments are presented in the plot of the cross section for the dark particle scattering versus its mass. And the colored stuff on the plot, on the left-handed plot, for instance, tells us what is the precision of the direct detection experiments. For instance, xenon 1 ton is now the most precise experiment. This is this blue. This is this blue. Looking for my cursor always, continuously. Yes, this is this blue limit here. The blue limit is xenon 1 ton. And that, as I said, that gives us a bound on the cross section for the scattering of the dark matter particle on a nucleon versus its mass. Now, measuring the invisible branching ratios for the Higgs decay would cover the region which is not expected to be covered by any of those direct detection experiments, and this is shown by those contours which are to the left of the plot. Oh my God. You see the contours here to the left of the plot. This is the region which can be covered by those precise high luminosity LHC experiments. which are not accessible in the direct detection experiment because the cross section for this region of light dark matter particles is too small. I'm sorry, but I have some problems with my finding my cursor here. I don't know what's going on. Okay, so the last thing, which is one of the main goals of the new accelerators, is measuring the triple Higgs coupling. In the standard model, first of all, this is a very important parameter for theoretical for the theories of electroweak baryogenesis. Electroweak baryogenesis requires the electroweak phase transition to be strong enough, which is not the case in the standard model. The Higgs potential in the standard model gives us only a second order phase transition, whereas for the electroweak baryogenesis, we need first order phase transition. For that, the triple Higgs coupling has to be sizably larger than it's predicted by the standard model. And the standard model is predicted by the mass of the Higgs and the VEF, electroweak VEF. That, unfortunately, measuring that coupling is very, very non-trivial. It requires to observe the double Higgs production, which is shown on the diagrams at the bottom of the screen. And the cross section for such productions, even for larger, significantly larger values of the triple Higgs coupling than predicted by the standard model, the cross sections are small. At the LHCb, they expect to produce, to get a bound, assuming that the standard model coupling, that the triple Higgs coupling is indeed as predicted by the standard model, they expect to get measure it within 50% accuracy, which means that if the coupling is by 50% larger than in the standard model, then it will be measured at the high luminosity LHC. Well, another thing which is interesting, which I will probably skip now because we are approaching 2 o'clock, are the measurements of the electron electric dipole moment. They are sensitive to the, this is an observable which violates CP conservation. And it's zero, almost zero in the standard model. However, it's interesting because it's really sensitive to the possibility of having imaginary contribution to the Higgs Yukawa couplings. That is again absolutely necessary for baryogenesis as the electroweak phase transition. So it's another link to the cosmological astrophysical questions. Okay, so I will skip that. The reason why this measurement is sensitive to the Higgs couplings is because of the diagram. And that diagram depends, in fact, on the imaginary contribution to the beyond the standard model imaginary contribution to the Higgs-Yukawa couplings. The last few minutes of my talk I would like to devote to the flavor window to physics beyond the standard model, because this is a very interesting window, and in fact testing different kinds of beyond the standard model theories than the other windows. Well, first of all, I would like to say, to stress the fact that in certain sense, flavor is a beyond the standard model concept. The standard model can, in principle, is based on one family. The three families of quarks and leptons have identical quantum numbers and in consequence, identical gauge interactions. At least for leptons, for quarks, there is a certain complication because the families differ by their interactions with the Higgs field, which actually is not controlled by any symmetry, any flavor symmetry, but leads to flavor masses and mixing, which are free parameters of the standard model. So, flavor is necessary for nature, but it's not necessary for the standard model to be a consistent theory. In that sense, flavor window is very special, because contrary to the other things which I have been discussing, which from the theoretical point of view are predicted by most of the beyond the standard model theories driven or constructed with this famous hierarchy problem, or with the attempt to explain the Brout-Engler-Higgs mechanism in a dynamical way. This was the guiding principle in the theories which I was mentioning before. All of them are driven by that idea that the condensation of the Higgs particle should have some dynamical explanation. Contrary to that guiding principle, the flavor window is testing different direction in extending the standard model. Namely, it's testing the universality of interactions of those three families, and possibly hinting also to flavor symmetries. Which are totally beyond the standard model. So, in that flavor window, there is especially interesting case of leptons. Because in the standard model, the lepton physics, the strong interaction corrections to pure lepton physics are not relevant. For semi-leptonic decays, they are of course relevant, but nevertheless, what is important is that the charged leptons in the approximation of zero neutrino masses have very particular properties. First of all, lepton flavor conservation is essentially exact. Decays like mu into electron gamma are forbidden. Of course, quark flavor conservation is not exact because of the mixing of Kobayashi-Maskawa mixing, but for leptons it's exact. There's no mixing in the zero neutrino mass approximation, which is of course very good for that purposes. And secondly, lepton gauge interactions are universal, are strictly universal. And that should can be tested in both charged and neutral currents. So we have very clean theoretical prediction for the lepton sector. And it turns out that there is, again, a famous anomaly, a long-standing anomaly for the lepton, in the namely the lepton universality violation in the BD case into kaons and muon pair and kaon and electron pair. That prediction is, because we talk about the ratio, the strong corrections because of the quarks in the B mesons, the strong corrections essentially factorize. And theoretically, this ratio is predicted to be one up to less than per mil correction. I mean, strong interactions give us something like one per mil correction here, or 0.3 of per mil. So there's a very clean theoretical prediction in the standard model, which is in disagreement with the data. Again, long-standing disagreement with many papers written about that. And the deviations of the order of 4 sigma. Among many or several possibilities to explain it, there are some that, well, first of all, I should say that extending the standard model to take care of deviations in the flavor sector are always pretty much ad hoc, because neither of those theories, which I mentioned before, really address the flavor problem. The flavor problem is external to those theories as it is external to the standard model. So the window, the flavor window, as I said, is touching a totally new area. And therefore, the explanations to such deviations as this one, they are not built into a consistent, bigger theoretical framework. They are pretty much ad hoc, but nevertheless interesting and giving some predictions. And one of those interesting possibilities to explain this deviation is the existence of new U1 gauge symmetry with a new U1, with a new gauge boson Z prime, which has flavor dependent couplings and can explain such decays as in the diagram below. Almost my last slide. That deviations, which are on the experimental side, which are still around with us, or even more than before around with us. The question can be, on the theory side, is it possible to explain all three? And indeed, there are ideas that it is possible to explain all three. I mean, the lepton flavor non-universality, G minus two, and the candidate for dark matter. And those explanations usually require new light BSM particles, which are predict new light BSM particles. However, with production cross-sections, they are not strongly interacting, and therefore the production cross-sections are too low for the LHC, and maybe even for the LHC, for high luminosity LHC. So the precision data might be a complementary, very, very important window to get convinced about their existence. So the summary, a brief summary, I was speaking about precision measurements, about the fact that precision measurements have proved in the past to be a powerful tool for indirect discoveries in the standard model. The question is, will the history repeat itself in the case of the BSM physics. I was discussing several observables which are particularly sensitive to new physics, which includes new non-strongly interacting particles, which are difficult to see in colliders. And those observables are mostly the Higgs sector and the lepton sector. There are promising deviations from the standard model predictions in the muon magnetic moment and in the lepton universality tests. And the observed anomalies also with a good candidate for dark matter can be simultaneously explained theoretically, but one has to admit that those models are not as complete, or pretty much ad hoc, not as complete as the theories guided by the desire to explain dynamically the condensation of the Higgs boson in the standard model, and also at the same time addressing the hierarchy problem. Thank you. I am obliged to show the next slide as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. Thanks for a very nice talk. So do we have some questions from the audience?
I have a question, if I may.
Yes.
About this lepton universality, muons and electrons. Is there any positivity rule which says that if the experimental value for muons is bigger than for electrons, regardless errors and uncertainties, just that it is bigger, that it means that there must be a new particle? I mean, is the contribution monotonously growing with discoveries of new particles?
Sorry, I'm not sure if I get... We are talking about deviations from the standard model, yes?
We are talking about the data, about this universality, yes. And the data shows that for muons, that R of muons to electrons is bigger, just bigger. And let's suppose that we want to be clean and we want to use only this information from the experiment, that it is bigger than the theory prediction. Is it enough to say that there must be a new contribution?
Well, universality seems to be broken, right?
Yeah.
So you need new contribution somewhere.
But it's broken in particular ways. Excuse me. For muons, it is bigger than for electrons. Yes, it's not other way around. So the very fact that it is bigger is like with the, I'm asking about the similar property like with the R ratio in E plus minus. We know that it grows if the new quark is discovered. So is there similar behavior, similar phenomena like that here?
No, but actually that deviation goes in the other way around. The value, the experimental value for R is smaller than one.
Okay.
So
this means?
So that means that it's not necessary, I mean, that it means
that you
need some interference effects which decrease the value.
Yeah, okay. So sign is not relevant, but I mean, is there a monotonous behavior?
How can you explain the deviation without some new effects? I mean, what do you mean by that? In the standard model, the only possibility is that there is an experimental systematic error, no?
No, I was just trying to eliminate all uncertainties and using only one experimental information, that the experiment is bigger or smaller, as you said properly, or smaller than the theory. Is this information enough to tell us something in this case?
Well, the statement is that this ratio is predicted to be one, exactly one in the standard model.
Yeah.
So what, how can you, so if there is, if experiment tells you that it's statistically significant lower than one, how can you explain it without any, you cannot explain it in the standard model, no?
Yes, yes, yes.
So you need something else.
I need something else, and this something else in this case has to be negative.
Yes, but this is not a problem to make it negative. I mean, the problem is to make to get something else, to have something else.
Yes. Okay.
The problem is to have something else because the sign is less relevant. But this, right. this, to have something else, you need new particles. What else can you? One way or another, you have to introduce new particles.
No, I was just saying that suppose that it, I still have this example of R in E plus E minus in mind. It is a very simple quantity in that respect, because it is just growing one by one or bit by bit if we had the new quarks. So if it's growing or if it is going down, it doesn't really matter. But is there such a monotoneity?
But the list of particles in the standard model is fixed, no?
Yes.
So if you want to have this analogy, then you need to enlarge the list of particles in the standard model.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So,
but then I would be, I'm sure that for R E plus E minus, it would grow. And here, do I know?
Probably, yes, naively speaking, yes. But okay. The number experimentally is lower than one.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Robert?
Yeah, thank you. My question is short. I mean, we'll need at least short answer. It concerns G minus two, because this is, well, experimentally the most attainable. We know that difference is very big between this new experimental data and theoretical predictions, even bigger than four sigma. But lattice calculations give smaller difference just in between theoretical experimental results, about two sigma. Do you know what is not included in lattice calculations or what is included in other way? I guess this is not electromagnetic part, because this is very well known, not weak part, because if we limit
as far as I know, this is the question about this hadronic contribution.
Of course, but which part do you know?
I think this is this part which is disputed all the time, namely, how big is the correction to the... I'm not sure about what I'm saying now, but I think this is the same part which is disputed for a long time. How big is the correction to the photon propagator? This is what people are usually calculating by different means, by dispersion relations, for instance. And I understand that the dispersion relations for the photon propagator using the resonance production in plus E minus, right?
Yeah.
And I understand that in this lattice calculations, they dispute the results obtained by the dispersion calculations. But honestly speaking, I am not sure if I'm correct.
Okay.
I think that's correct. What you said.
But not light by light or hadronic vacuum polarization?
That is what I talk about, yes.
Hadronic vacuum polarization.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, this is what I called corrections to the photon propagator. These are
hadronic
vacuum polarizations, yes.
Okay, thanks.
I think I should use this more proper wording, hadronic vacuum polarization, yes.
Okay, do we have any extra questions? If I could ask something, when you had talked about the baryogenesis and maybe playing with the free Higgs coupling, if instead you just kept with the standard model and introduced, treated it as an effective theory with high dimensional operators. Can you, has anyone looked at whether you could reproduce biogenesis for higher dimensional operator contributions and not dimension four?
Yes, yes, definitely. This is the main, in fact, this is the main way to talk about that, to study that. You add higher dimension, dimension six operators, and they modify the triple coupling in particular. They modify because then, well, they modify both the Yukawa couplings and the triple coupling, depends on which dimension six operators you introduce. And in fact, you can obtain prompt strong enough first order electric phase transition with the extra dimension six operators. The point is that it's so to get the right answer, to get strong enough phase transition, you need the deviations from the standard model of the order of factor of two. And hopefully that can be measured. But the answer to your question is yes, it has been studied. It's precisely this way, effective field theory approach.
Right. So, but if the higher dimension, if we scale up the higher dimensional operators was something like 10 to the 15 at the gut scale or so, could you reproduce? Could you get the biogenesis from something which happened almost at the end of inflation? Or do you need to scale the mass scale for the high dimensional operator, something like a TV scale?
Well, if we talk about electroweak biogenesis, I mean, now you're asking a different question, actually. Because if we talk about electroweak biogenesis, then we specifically talk about getting biogenesis together with the electroweak phase transition. And for that, you need what I was saying about the triple Higgs coupling concerns this case, that I have the standard model, which gives me a coupling which is too small. If I want to have a strong electroweak phase transition, and I can make this electroweak phase transition strong enough by adding dimension six operators. And of course the scale of those dimensions, the dimension for the Wilson coefficient of that operator cannot have a scale of, need to have a scale of the order of one TeV, something like that. But this is for the electro, to have biogenesis at the electro, or let's say to have electroweak phase transition strong enough. Now you are asking about a phase transition, a gut phase transition.
Yeah.
And my answer, is that I have no idea.
Okay. Okay, something to think about. Okay.
So how to get but there are certain problems with biogenesis at the gut scale. How to get it? Because B minus L conserved, interactions which conserve B minus L, I think they tend to wash out the baryon asymmetry which was produced at the gut scale.
Okay.
So there is a, I think one has to check, I don't remember that in detail, but I think people have studied that question.
Okay.
And the problem is to get the asymmetry to survive.
Okay, because this comes with my partly in connection with what I was talking about last week in Warsaw. But if you treated the standard model as sort of an emergent system, then you get this tower of high dimensional operators, which only really become active close to the scale of emergence. So the question is, can that do the job or not? And you're telling me that it'll probably be washed out.
Yes, yes, I realize. I now seem to remember that there is some problem with biogenesis at the gut scale.
Okay.
Because of the washing out of this asymmetry.
Okay.
But one has to check it,
Okay, great, thanks. Okay, so we're now over the official hard cutoff time of 15:15. Are there any last questions? Okay, Stefan, thank you very much for the talk. So this is being recorded. Firstly, can you send me a PDF of your slides? And Mikhail, if you're still there. No, he's got it. For the recording, I don't want to lose the thing. If I just switch it off, which button do I have to use to switch it off for I store it and not lose it?
Don't ask me. I have no idea.
Do we have an expert in the Zoom recording?
I asked for this. So the whole seminar is very, very interesting. Maybe if you want to skip, just discussion, okay?
Okay, I mean, what button on the computer do I press to actually stop it and not lose it? I'm recording, okay. And I've got a little thing on the left with two lines, two dashes next to each other and a big blob next to each other. Which one do I press?
I don't know.
Okay, I'll just try.
I think you can enter the meeting and it's okay.
Okay, very good. So hopefully it's safe somewhere. Okay.
Well, you want me to send you the PDF file?
Yeah, just definitely for the slide. And okay, I think.